Some people think it is nothing but an ancient symbol. It doesn't really exist. Hello and welcome to episode 441 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And hello, I'm Scotto.
And I think that's the first time in months that I haven't messed up the episode number in some way. And before we get to this week's movie, we've got a voicemail from Bodo about this week's movie. Finally, he left this like on March 9th.
This was a long time in the waiting and on many levels, really.
And here it is.
Crawl. The magic boomerang. You know, I am a geek. I love Dungeons & Dragons. I grew up with it. I played the original box set. I'm so freaking old. I've always liked this movie. It's always had a place in my heart. Does it hold up? Not really, but I still love it. It's just a fun movie. The best Cyclops of Leela of Futurama. I would have to get it 4.5. I mean, thank you guys for telling me to do something that I can appreciate. You guys are the best. Peace.
Thanks, Bodo. Thank you, Bodo, and you're welcome. I would say going into this, I didn't think I would agree with you, but I think I came around. D&D is an interesting one, because you and I both got a D&D vibe from this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And the Leela thing, I heard your voicemail before I watched the movie, and all I could think of was Leela the whole time. Also, Bodo left another voicemail, a shorter one. I'm not going to play it, but he, in reference to our DC animated conversation last week, he recommended Superman the Red Sun. More specifically, he recommended the communist or the Russian Superman movie. I looked it up. It's Superman Red Sun.
Wow.
So that might be worth checking out. I'm certainly going to. Thank you for the recommendation, Bodo.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's there was a comic, a pretty fairly long-standing comic about that, a Russian Superman.
Yeah.
And so apparently they made a movie. I'm interested.
As opposed to the Canadian Superman that we've got, right? Mm.
Okay, quick tangent. You mentioned Canadian.
You know, Metropolis is supposed to be Toronto, right?
Right.
Not New York.
It's interesting. I always thought it was Kansas City, but because, you know, Midwest and he's from Kansas. But you mentioned Canadian. I started watching Murdoch Mysteries.
I thought you were going to say Letterkenny. I was down for a Letterkenny conversation.
I was looking for, you know, steampunk stuff. I found Mount Murdoch Mysteries. Like the first episode, Tesla was in it. I'm looking forward to more, but man, is it Canadian.
Oh, I remember that show now. What you said, man, was that Canadian and they had Tesla in it? Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it's such a fun watch.
Oh, it looks great, but I was just struck by the Canadianness of it.
There's such an unintentional Dudley Do-Right thing about it.
Oh, yeah.
It's in the steampunk thing.
And finally, on to this week's movie, which is from 1983, Krull. Finally kicking off our fantasy quadrilogy that we were supposed to get to like a month ago, if not more. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by LARPing. It's different than making a movie.
Or is it? And also brought to you by space. You know, when creating a space opera, for fuck's sake, have some space in it. How would their kids rule the galaxy? Well, renting an interplanetary Uber?
I mean, the rock formation took over the galaxy from a planet, so, you know, maybe they could stay on Krull and rule the galaxy?
Maybe. Maybe he figures out the dimension door thing and pops in on different planets.
I mean, his dad had a handle on magic shuriken, so I'm sure he could handle dimension door.
I mean, at the rate they were going, he really didn't have much control as to where the castle was, did he? It just kind of went around and you're just like, oh, here I am. I guess I'll do something on this shit planet. All right. So we have a star-crossed lovers about to get married. This army that travels.
They weren't really star-crossed. It was a king and his princess, and they were very happy together until, you know, the bad guy showed up.
But they're from different families on different sides of the track.
That's just how power got traded back then. I mean,
and the fathers hated it. The fathers were so against it, but the kids wanted to do it. And so
the only thing that, well, I won't say made the movie worse because I enjoyed the movie, but man, that would have been painful if they tried a Romeo and Juliet thing on top of Lovers to All of Us.
So their army travels across the land. They ask for aid, but don't get it and get nearly wiped out. I'm like, wow, I wonder what's going on here. Well, you see, the planet has been invaded by these alien slayers, which I just kept wanting to hear some speed metal.
Yeah, I almost made a Slayer reference for my title, but like three of the big four are from California, so I wasn't sure how I could distinguish them.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently they have laser guns, and the inhabitants of the planet just seem to have swords and axes that make sparkly, you know, lights. Yeah. So naturally they mow them down any chance they get, pretty much. Yeah. They said they lost 300 men just to get to the wedding.
Van Poel bringing a sparkly sword to a laser gun fight.
Oh, good one. But they go through the wedding anyway. What's the worst that could happen? Oh, I know. The aliens could come and mow them down some more and kidnap the princess. Now, they pretty much, it looks like they leave everyone for dead. So I'm not sure why he is so interested in marrying this princess. I know there's a prophecy. There's a prophecy that a queen is going to rule the land, which, of course, if you have a monarchy, there's a pretty good chance a queen is going to rule the land.
Yes, yes. But also, in a rather exposition-heavy scene, they did establish that it wasn't just a political marriage. They were in love with each other.
Right, right. Yes, yeah, so there's a good, like, half hour of exposition that, I don't know. I don't know why they bothered. But anyway, what does the tough do when your father gets killed in front of you and your bride gets kidnapped?
He buys a D20 and puts a party together.
Well, right. You would think so. Instead, he hooks up with an old man who brings him rock climbing.
Well, yeah. They have to get the enchanted weapon first.
Yes, they have to get the enchanted weapon, and they do, and then you don't see it for another hour.
Well, they establish that. They set that up. He says, you know, pick your shot. Be careful, you know, use it selectively. So, you know, it's not like you expected it to be used before then.
What? I mean, going into the movie, you kind of
thought this was going to be...
a glaive fest. Yeah.
Going in, I thought it was going to be used in every other scene.
And, right, you thought, you know. Right. And then he gets it, and it's like, all right, finally. It's like Star Trek the Motion Picture, where it took like 26 minutes to get the glaive. Let's rock this. And then the old man says, nope, you got to put it away. And I'm like, wait a minute. How does he train to use it?
Put that thing away and don't use it till you're an adult.
Yes, but you'll shoot your eye out, kid. So, so they've got the glaive. It's time to get this. This is his lady, right? Mm-hmm. It's time to kick some ass with this thing. Well, no, he's got to go to find the blind seer. Clever wordplay. Mm-hmm. And he can tell where this where the swamp thing's moving castle is, or the creature from the Black Lagoon's moving castle is. Mm-hmm. On which day. But that goes to shit, unfortunately.
First they picked up the incompetent wizard.
That's true. They pick up the world's worst wizard, who should have just had comic relief tattooed on his forehead. Pretty much the precursor of Jar Jar Binks, if you will.
Yeah.
They pick up the wizard. They see a cyclops stalking them. I can't remember if they got the thieves at this point. I think they get the thieves. No, they pick up the thieves also. A small band of
The
thieves
party had like 10 rogues.
with some really talented actors who are going to do some amazing shit in other films in the future.
Right.
One of them made a list, I believe, of all the things that you could save on the planet. No, too soon.
Fighter,
Okay.
a bad mage, a
Sing
healer,
on.
and like 10 rogues.
Man, tough room.
But
You and
like,
an Oscar Schindler joke can't go
really,
over. What am I doing?
like 10 rogues, a fighter, a healer, and an incompetent wizard. What the hell were they expecting?
Right. So they get the seer. It goes to shit pretty easily, actually. Like it just. I mean, I don't understand how they the beast could lose when he could just like pop in and all right. Off you go. And so then they have to go to the spider lady, because maybe she'll be able to tell them where the moving cat the castle du jour is.
Fortunately,
And
that scene was very well telegraphed.
well, I guess it was just like a regular spider blown up, wasn't it?
Well, no, you see a big shot. They talk about we're going to see the Spider Queen now, or the Web Widow, and
Right.
you see a big shot of a web. I'm like, okay, time to look away.
And it made this like real twitchy noise, which was kind of like, do spider would a spider really do that? I don't
I didn't see the spider because I was able to look away the whole time, but that sound was possibly worse than actually looking at the damn thing.
know. Yeah, looking at it was hilarious. It was I was trying to think of another Clash of the Titans title, but to go with the other Star Wars knockoff that we did. But so they do get the location, and of course Obi-Wan Kenobi has to have his ticket punched in some way, and well, the sands of time ran out on him,
I thought
and
the old guy would be like the first. Well, no, the other old guy, the healer, I thought was going to be the first to go because he was kind of, the mentor.
Right, Obi-Wan.
It was the blind seer that went in the quicksand.
The blind seer went into the quicksand. Well, he was killed by a doppelganger, but Obi-Wan Kenobi died from he had the life
Oh,
sand in
that's
his
right.
hand,
That's right.
and he only had until that sand ran out, and so he had to run to tell them where it was going to be, and they then had the location. And a stroke of luck, we're able to wrangle some flame mares to after giving him a burial, apparently too. I'm like, wait a minute, like which one is it? You got to move and get there like within a day, or you got to give this guy a burial? But they do, and they finally make it to the castle, and finally the glaive is unleashed. Oh, I had the time down. It was 26 minutes that he got it. And then it was
Probably 10 minutes left of the movie when he finally used it.
an hour and 42 minutes
Yeah, about 10 minutes
to
left of the movie.
actually
About 20 minutes.
use the boomerang. Yes, like less than about 15 minutes left. And of course, it is he just throws it and it hangs in the air and
Just
just does
saws
its
through a
thing.
wall. Yeah, I'm making shuriken jokes, and it's actually more of a rotary saw.
Right. So I'm like, wow, I guess that's why he didn't have to train with it, because he just chucked it. And it just did all the rest. I mean, if you play D&D and you get into like the advanced magic weapons, they are kind of like that.
Oh
You
yeah,
get
sure.
it, they meld with you kind of thing, and you can have a lot of fun, because then it's like a buddy cop movie with your sword having a personality, and like, oh no,
Perfect.
let's go do that. No, let's not do that.
They've added a class or a spec for warlocks, Hexblade warlocks.
Oh,
You
yep.
can actually play it like I one of the games I'm watching, the warlock sword actually does have a personality and she has conversations with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I did that in a couple of different campaigns where, I mean, so the sword had a specific thing that it hated, And yeah, once they were there, the sword just like, come on, let's get him.
Basically, your weapon is your patron and your focus.
Or, you know, you get into arguments with it. No, 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 it's too dangerous. There's too many of them. We have to go. Like, oh, come on, let's take a few out. And really hilarity ensues at that point, of course, because, I mean, you have the traditional slowly demolishing, you know, building, you know.
It breaks just slow enough for them to get out in time.
Right, right. Things are falling from the ceiling, so we know that things are falling apart. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just slow enough for them to make the escape.
Yeah. Variety described the movie as Excalibur meets Star Wars Episode IV: A New Hope. I know New Hope very well. I haven't seen it. I don't think I've ever seen that Excalibur, so I'll find it next week if, you know, it lives up. But first, before all of that, the opening music was very Gilliam.
Right away, the opening music made me laugh out loud because it just seemed so disconnected from the movie itself.
Well, that's what confused me, because it's been ages since I've seen any of this movie. I forgot all about it except for the glaive. And so I'm expecting a straightforward fantasy movie. We get these shots of the glaive in space, and the logo looks really sci-fi. And then the movie starts with shots of an asteroid.
Right. That's the only space we see in this whole film, is during the credits.
The asteroid lands like a ship. Reminded me of the Mandachi ones from Fifth Element. It lands just like that ship. And, you know, it was kind of an interesting mix of fantasy and sci-fi. The princess, Lizette Anthony, was the actress. The body actress. Had a big thing for her back in the day. But she was obviously dubbed. Princess Lyssa, okay. She was dubbed by Lindsay Krause.
Okay.
An actress I've seen in a number of things. Do you remember The Arrival? I think we reviewed that years ago. Charlie Sheen movie about aliens invading Earth.
I do. That was decent, if I remember right.
Yeah, she was in that. She did a season of Buffy. She's done a number of things, but yeah, she dubbed Lissa's voice. But she was so obviously dubbed, it was hilarious. Robbie Coltrane was also dubbed. I actually didn't pick Robbie Coltrane out of the movie.
It wasn't until like the end of the scene that I'm like, wait, that's Robbie Coltrane.
Was he the one who always was going on about how it was a waste of time?
Yes.
Okay.
He had this really short hair and a mustache. He was too young.
But
was he dubbed? I didn't think he was.
Yeah, I didn't know the actor's name, but yeah, he was dubbed too.
Why would they dub Robbie Coltrane?
Don't know. Weird thing is, it's a mostly British cast, but they dubbed Lizette Anthony who is British, if I recall correctly, with an American actor. I guess the big heroes had to be American.
They didn't give Coltrane enough lines to really make a difference whether they dubbed him or not, really. I think he only had like four lines in the whole thing.
Incidentally, the scene between the princess and her father was ridiculously exposition heavy.
Yes. I mean, and to have that right after the narrator, which was exposition, was just kind of like, wait, is the prince going to come with like this PowerPoint presentation?
Practically. He shows up and he was actually, I think he was actually a king, but he shows up and, you know, even more exposition. I liked the interior of the castle, the good guy's castle. Very angular, very 80s. Reminded me of the video for Don't Come Around Here No More.
One thing that was done well in this movie, out of everything, was the set design.
Yeah.
The set design was fucking insane. All the budget, obviously. Like I described the princess, her role in the movie was to wander around in their set budget.
Yeah, basically. The Black Fortress, the evil castle, it was a rock formation on the outside and essentially a bird skeleton on the inside.
Right, there was an eye, there was...
Those shots of her, like the distant shots of the eye that zoom into her, so fucking Kubrick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, very much was.
ridiculously
Yeah, I was thinking 2001.
good. But rolling back a bit, the Slayer's entrance to the wedding, very Python. That's when I started thinking growl.
The introduction to the Slayers, where they're just doing some weird thing with their spears or swords, like sticking them in the air, kind of. It was just like, what is that supposed to be? Is this Planet of the Apes?
I actually think, though, that this was a better D&D movie than the one that actually was made.
It really, Holy Grail does sum this up because it is like somebody tried to make a serious version of
Not that
Monty Python and the
serious.
Holy
And
Grail.
I think that's why I didn't like it back when I watched it previously, because I was expecting ultra serious, straight-faced, fantasy movie, and it doesn't take itself that seriously, which I appreciate now. I did like Ergo the Magnificent, the incompetent wizard. He was obvious comic relief, but I got a kick out of him.
I think the character I liked most was actually the Cyclops.
Cyclops creeped me out.
I think that's what was great about him, though. He looked like he was modeled off of John Belushi or something. Just kind of
Yeah,
like,
he was
oh, yeah.
just very 70s. He just kind of follows them from a distance,
Yes.
which, I mean, admittedly, I've done I, back in the day, I did some of that, but now I understand why it's fucking creepy. Although every time they said his name, Rel, I couldn't help thinking Rel Imperial Cyclops Kid. I did notice Neeson, Liam Neeson among the thieves. I did like the lore about the Cyclopses. That was interesting.
Yeah.
How they were tricked by the beasts and lost their one of their eyes. Also loved the line, "Death and power are close cousins."
The trees growing into one.
And I gotta admit, they throw a ton of money at this movie, because the lighting of the lightning effect when they during the fight, the sparkly swords, it looked good.
It's just a weird matchup, though, to have some people with laser swords and some people with swords.
I mean, it looked better
I
than
mean,
the lightning
laser
effect, the
guns.
lightning effect in New Hope, to be honest. Although I still don't understand why the early 80s were so obsessed with quicksand.
It was a scene that really should have been cut. If I were to lose any scene of this, you gotta lose the quicksand scene. I mean, was it Land of the Lost or an episode of the A-Team? It just, I mean, right. It was something that every show had to have.
It was an absolute trope back in the day, and I still don't understand it. They revealed that the blind seer had been replaced very quickly. I was surprised. I thought that was going to be, played out longer.
Right. That probably would have been pretty cool if they played that out longer. And but although it really made no sense why he was taken out, I mean, that easily.
I guess he was no longer narratively convenient. That's about all I can think is, they didn't have anything more in the script for him to do, so we'll have him betray them and get killed. Incidentally, his remains going back into the quicksand, also a very cool effect.
Oh, when he came back up with from the
After he was revealed to be, a demon or whatever, and he went, he dis they killed him and he disappeared into the quicksand. That looked very
Yeah, there are a
cool.
lot of the weird like little worms, you know. I guess they were, I don't know if they were going for a Dune effect.
Now, you mentioned the Fire Mares before.
Yeah.
Very cool to see a whole team of Clydesdales, running through the canyons and all of that. But did we need to spend like 10 minutes on them capturing some horses?
And then what really didn't make any sense was the Cyclops has to stay. Why? because this is where he's going to die.
Right. And but, I had very mixed feelings about him dying because he was creepy, but also kind of entertaining.
It's like, but wait a minute. Why would he die there?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only reason he would stay is because of the prophecy that he's going to die there.
Yeah.
You get it? Like, I'm,
right.
You know, I'm going to have the safe fall on my head, you know.
So I'm just going to stand here until it falls, right?
Oh, I have no reason to go there, but I know that safe is going to fall on my head, okay. So I guess I'll go there so the safe can fall on my head?
Oddly, I didn't really care that much when he actually died during the fortress attack.
Right, and there was no need for him to stay behind except for them to give him a goodbye before he died.
Right.
That was clearly the only reason that came through. And it was kind of weird how people died and they like kind of tried to save them. And then it was just kind of like, oh yeah, I guess they're gone. That happened a few times. It happened with the Cyclops where, you know, the thing was closing on him.
And he could have gotten through. They held that door for like 30 seconds that he could have slipped into either side of it.
Yeah. Oh, but, yeah, totally.
Yeah, no, it's, we're just, he's no longer narratively convenient, you know.
The guy in the quicksand, you know, got killed, you know, they're just, he's there, he's trying to get him, and it's like, oh, yeah, he went under. Oh, well, I guess we'll go.
I think they wanted stakes, but this is not a movie for stakes. Though possibly the coolest thing about the movie.
But they wouldn't sell the stakes.
Flying demon horses.
Oh.
The fire mirrors. Their hoofs light up on fire, and then they take to the air.
I mean, I guess they could have done a little Ghost Riders in the Sky sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead, you have the soundtrack of just, like, playing over. The soundtrack was A Bull in the China Shop, the score.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the thing about this movie, is everything is just so disconnected. Mm-hmm. Like, the guy who did the score, if he actually watched this movie when he was scoring it, I would be shocked. Because it feels like he just made some music and they played it over.
It reminded me, not in the sense of the music itself, but that disconnect reminded me a lot of The Warriors.
Mm.
It's got that synth score and this, you know, supposedly gritty gang movie. Yeah.
Or Miami Connection.
Yeah, yeah. I'm blanking on the name. The Broderick movie we did not long ago.
Legend.
No, not Legend.
Lady Hawk.
Lady Hawk. Similar, like a pop score in a fantasy movie. It doesn't work, but it's kind of charming.
Well, I think they wanted a John Williams score, of course.
Mm-hmm, of course.
But I think what they've got is more of like a. Oh, what did I have? It was like Gilligan's Island with the quicksand.
Yeah.
No, it was like Sergio Leone meets E.T.
Yeah.
Like, oh, especially when they begin at the beginning with that chorus with those vocals.
Mm-hmm. This movie is kind of... This is a pug of a movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some people think pugs are cute. Some people think they're hideous. I think it was cute. It was ridiculous and made no sense, but I enjoyed it. I did think the attack on the fortress was nicely paced. They didn't waste any time. It was you know, nice and fast. Although it did lead to one of the... I think maybe one of my favorite things I've ever put in my notes for a movie. I know it won't happen, but I'm kind of hoping for a TPK. Incidentally, that is the Dungeons & Dragons movie that I want. I want a TPK movie. Where the whole party just fucking dies. TPK is total party kill.
Yeah.
It's when the entire party is killed during the, you know, during the course of a campaign. And pretty much in one fight, so they can't, like, pick up their backup characters.
It happens.
Yeah. I'm watching a Strahd game where they're pretty much the party of Theseus. Only the ranger is not playing her backup character.
Wow.
Everybody else is on their backup character. I'm kind of hoping she gets through the whole way. Sorry about that noise. It's my mic.
So pacing on this now,
just during the assault on the castle. That's
right,
all I'm
the
saying.
Assault on the castle pacing is fine.
Yeah,
but the fact that it took as long to get there is what I really, my big complaint about this movie is. It just rambles for so long. I mean, to go find the seer to find where the castle's going to be. No, then to go find the lady to find where the castle's going to be. And right, introducing stakes like, you know, we used to be young ourselves and stuff. Just like, oh my God, we don't care. Can't tell you how little we care. We don't really believe you guys had a relationship at one point. You're all just here for the fucking paycheck.
I made the pug reference kind of offhandedly, and I think it's apt, but
yeah,
particularly apt because I spent a lot of the movie just thinking, that's adorable. You thought this was gonna work. That's adorable. But I especially liked when he couldn't get the glaive back after he killed the beast. And he just looked so dejected. He's trying to pull the glaive back to him and it won't come back to him.
Everyone keeps comparing this to Star Wars, really. And that's like, there's only two threads they really took from Star Wars in all of this.
Yeah.
They have Obi-Wan Kenobi. And of course, they have the whiny bitch Skywalker.
And Kenobi is just the mentor.
Yeah,
that's straight up hero's journey.
True, of course, but they, you know, the whiny bitch Skywalker
that was
definitely straight up Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's it. I mean, I wouldn't say this was a Star Wars knockoff.
No, not
really.
No, it's a D&D knockoff with a weird sci-fi angle.
Considering there isn't a single ship battle in the whole fucking thing,
and it's a little bit, I think, unintentionally of a Holy Grail knockoff.
Now, I don't know if we talked about this. I wanted to see this movie like 38 years ago, you know?
I was super into it from the ads as a kid. Because, like we were saying earlier, we thought it was just going to be Glaive Fest.
Right. Like, as you know, I somehow never got to see it until this review. So it was like 38 years in the making, you know? And I'm sitting here thinking, how would 9 or 10 year old Scotto feel about this movie? And I feel like I probably would have been pissed.
It's 10 or 11 year old John would have been annoyed that the glaive only got used at the end.
Right. 10 minutes of glaive? 10? Really? I mean, they tried to sell this movie on the glaive alone.
Yeah.
They really did.
That's in the logo.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the video game, it's all glaive.
I mean, it's like they designed a cool weapon. And then, well, I can't say designed because it was a shuriken.
Right, right.
they repurposed a cool weapon that was especially popular in the 80s.
Right.
And, you know, built the movie around it, but then forgot to use the thing.
And then when they do use it, it just kind of lights up and spins in a circle and that's it.
Yeah. And they didn't even think to, you know, make most of the movie the quest for the glaive. Because that
right.
would explain why it wasn't used for most of the movie. You know, he gets it real early, and then he just keeps it in his pants.
Yeah. And speaking of keeping it in his pants, I mean, he kidnaps the princess, the beast.
Uh-huh.
He pretty much assumes everybody in that castle's dead. Why is he, like, why would he hold on to her? What purpose does kidnapping her really serve?
Well, I think he intended to marry her. It wasn't a ransom thing.
Yeah.
He said a number of times he intended to marry her. I don't know why they didn't just do that right away. But well,
right. Cause exactly. Like,
the
what?
Party needed time to get there.
He's, you know, all powerful, yet she could just, you know, not. Fight him off on his own. And all I could think is towards the end when they are reunited, spoiler, sorry, I've spared you. That
he's also seemingly spared me from putting this on the rec list.
I can't I kept thinking of Sucker Punch, where the whole like thing about defeating people with their dance. This, we're going to beat him with our love.
But rolling back a little bit, because you know the glaive won't come back to him. He looks like he's going to cry, and then he starts casting Fireball. It just seems like Fireball is a step down from Magic Shuriken.
I would say so too. Yeah.
And when Ergo died, I couldn't help wondering what was the point of Ergo.
Wait, Ergo didn't die.
He didn't die? I thought he died. Well, when the kid was carrying him out, then.
Yeah.
Why did they bring the kid to the Black Fortress fight?
That's a very good question. Why would they bring a kid to the Black Fortress?
The kid was leading. You're right. Ergo didn't die, but the kid was leading him out.
Yeah.
Like, why was the kid there?
Why would you bring Ergo? He's just as useless as the kid.
He's a changeling, but you know they didn't need to sneak into anywhere. They didn't need him he was a changeling who was never disguised as anything to help them get, you know, achieve the objective.
I don't think he was a changeling, actually. I think he was a really bad wizard
who just kept turning himself into animals.
He wanted to turn other people into animals,
okay,
but could only turn himself into the animals.
The trailer said something about a changeling.
Manimal's gonna sue.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, after the fortress finishes, you know, slowly falling apart so they could, you know, politely exit.
Oh, yeah. That's that was a 70s and 80s trope, too. Yeah. Just,
and then
I think 60s that goes back to.
Pieces of it start lifting off into the sky, which I don't understand, other than it looked kind of cool.
Right. They're launching into space. Wait, what?
And then it ends with, and their sun shall rule the galaxy. I smell a Dune-style sequel.
It would be funny to ask someone if they did have a sequel worked out. Because, you know, I mean, when, you know,
that people conveniently made these brings movies, us to sequels and remakes.
When people made these movies, they really thought, it's funny, when Lucas is making his movie, he was kind of like, I don't know if this is going to go over
or not. I better end it as a complete piece just in case I don't get a sequel.
Right, I may not get a chance to make another one after this. I'm going to like take my chance. He does that, of course, and has the highest grossing film of all time.
40-something years later, we're still getting sequels.
Right.
Or prequels. No, sequels, right, most recently.
These motherfuckers who, like, you could tell just did not give a fuck about any of this movie that they were making. Think, yeah, but let's leave room for a sequel. Because it just might go over.
And they could pull off a sequel now.
Of course they could.
Because it's their son ruling the galaxy. They could just, you know, forget the king and Lyssa. You know, they're already gone. Get rid of Krall. Or maybe have him have his base on Krall. Just to have, you know, he's got, you know, the glaive mounted on a wall or something. And, you know, it's the son ruling the galaxy.
And I think it would be great to have him be like, SpaceX, could you guys give me a lift to this other planet we're having problems at? Because, we don't have space travel capacity.
You mentioned games earlier. In 1983, several games were developed with the Krull license. A Parker Brothers board game and card game were produced. An arcade game was released by D. Gottlieb & Company, who also designed a pinball game that never went into production. I thought I remembered a pinball game.
We had the Atari.
Yeah. A console game was originally planned for the Atari 5200, but changed to the 2600 because of poor sales of the 5200. I'm pretty sure we had the board game, but I don't think we ever played it because none of us ever saw the movie.
Yeah, we never saw the movie, but we had the 2600 game.
On to brains.
On to brains.
I had a blast with this thing. It's not a good movie. Like Bodo said, it doesn't hold up, but it's adorable and a lot of fun, and I'm right up there with Bodo, 4.5.
Oh, man. This makes a wonderful midnight showing, I think.
Absolutely.
But unfortunately, to just watch it on your own, it's fun for some parts of it, but it just drags on, where you're just like, oh my god, there's still an hour to go kind of thing. So, but I mean, it is a worse movie than Cats, I think. But there are some enjoyable parts of giving it a two.
All right, and what have we learned?
It really turns out you just need a good fucking flamethrower, doesn't it?
And I learned that you don't want to go to the Black Fortress. It's a silly place.
It's only a model.
And that's it for Krull. Until next time, we'll be reviewing Excalibur, continuing our fantasy quadrilogy. This one had much more of a budget and much more, hype back in the day, but I don't think it's going to be much better.
Oh yeah, who knows?
I'm really, this is the one I'm most curious about in this whole quadrilogy.
I think I've seen this one actually.
Okay.
I mean, can't remember much of it,
Only one I've seen
which isn't
was
a good sign.
the last one, Flesh and Bone, I think it was called, which I saw on cable a bunch of times back in, many years ago. That's probably going to be the most fun. Rutger Hauer and
Oh,
Jennifer,
of course.
yep, and a young Jennifer Jason Leigh with a few nude scenes. So that'll be the most fun. I know nothing about the third one, Triumph of the Valiant. Anyway, until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.